Welcome back to another edition of the Wolverine Live Podcast, Wolverine.com. With me, Doug Skeen. I'm Chris Ballas. This is Michigan's former All-Big Ten offensive lineman here, played for the New England Patriots, who are in a dogfight right now with the Green Bay Packers. Great game. So if you're just joining us from that, you should probably go back and tell us what happens here, because that's looking back and forth. I'm just kidding. Give us a like, though, and we appreciate it. And looking forward to watching Tom Brady tonight. So, but before then, Skeen, we're going to break down some Michigan and Iowa. And it's funny. You know what? You look at the final stats in this game. You look at the stats through three quarters and you're thinking, man, they're absolutely mauling these guys and controlling these guys. But one little break there in concentration can change the tenor of a whole game. And it goes from laughter to, you know what? You're on the edge of your seat a little bit here. So, but Skeen, when you win at Iowa, when you're up by 20 a couple of times and you win by double figures, I don't care how bad they are. That's very good victory on the road.
So this was a big win, Ballas, because going back to the beginning of the year, remember I had Michigan at 10-2 and I thought this was going to be the one that Michigan was going to drop. And then the other one we'll talk about later in the season. But, because I know how hard it is to go win at Iowa, the teams are usually incredibly well coached. They play at a different level when they're at home. The defense coming into this game was highly touted. And so this was the challenge of the year so far for Michigan. And I thought, man, they played really well in most facets of the game. There's still a few things that was like, oh, wait a minute, that needs to be fixed. Yep. And we'll talk about those. But overall, this is a great win for Michigan. A no big doubt. Win. Anytime you can win on the road at Iowa, I think it's a big deal. So this was a big one for Michigan and a great one.
Yeah. So for the Twitter people who were telling me online or on Twitter, lighten up, Francis, after, you know, I said at the end of the game, that last drive was irksome, you know, when they let him drive down the field. Number one, because it cost me staff picks. Actually, I think it cost you a win in staff picks.
So, I was going to be really, really close to staff picks.
Yeah, you and me both. And instead, John Borton gets the backdoor staff picks victory. Just a few things. So when you're breaking down a game, that you can be thrilled with a win, but as you always say, you know what, if you've got things to work on, then these are things that you're gonna have to improve to beat Ohio State, to beat the better teams on the schedule, the Penn States. You know, we would have said Michigan State at one time. We'll get to that in a minute. Probably not anymore. Yeah. However, that's gonna be Michigan's Super Bowl there. I don't think there's any question, or Michigan State Super Bowl. So
it always is.
It always is. But when we just saw those stats there that Hutch put up, if you look through the end of the third quarter, and to me, you know, you're doubling up in yardage, and the push that they got, the offensive line, the push that they got from the get-go, Skeen, I knew, even when they were bringing these guys in a little bit tighter and they were still getting push in the power game, that Michigan's offensive line was probably going to have a pretty good day, and so was the offense.
The first two possessions of that game for Michigan and Iowa could not have gone better for Michigan. That offensive line was cracking 5-6 yards per snap on the ground for the most part of that first quarter. And I thought, Michigan's got this. All they got to do is this, and we're going to handle them. And eventually, that's mostly what we did. So kudos to the interior Michigan offensive line, Keegan and Olawotimi and Zinter at right guard, really handling the middle in there. Of course, the two tackles played well and the tight end. The blocking and the running in the first part of that football game set this thing up for Michigan to have success. Now, it wasn't without concern, but it was an impressive display of offense from Michigan. And so the one couple thoughts, Ballas, is I'm watching this game. I'm watching this Iowa defense, right? I'm thinking, oh, man, these guys are supposed to be so good, and they're tough. And I'm watching this defense, the defensive front specifically. I'm like, yeah, their linebackers can run, and they're playmakers. They're football players. But where were the studs on that Iowa defensive line? They don't have a Mozzie Smith. They don't have that. They don't have anybody like that guy. And where's the Morris? Where's their Morris on their defensive line? I didn't see anybody that's as good as our guy in that position. And so, and then the way our defensive line finished our game against them, I'm like, well, the Michigan defensive line is better than these guys. And that's not to diminish the impressive nature that Michigan's offensive line had. I'm just saying that I was a little underwhelmed with this imposing Iowa defense that I thought we were going to face. Nonetheless, it was a great win for Michigan in that first series. Remember when I said we're going to see a little bit more depth in the offensive playbook, Ballas?
Yeah.
That Ronnie Bell touchdown.
Yep.
You go back and watch it from the back end. Schoonmaker is on the left, and he makes a move to the offensive right, and you watch all three of those linebackers, they see that motion and they scrape over to the front side of that offense, and then he plants his foot and reverses field as a lead blocker. Those linebackers were all out of the play.
Yep.
That is a wrinkle we have not seen yet so far this year, and that's the kind of thing that you unveil as you get into these other games against these other opponents. And it's like, ooh, that was a really nice little twist. I hadn't seen that all year, and it caught Iowa off guard.
And you break tendency, and you run different things off of similar looks that you've shown, you know, over and over and over again. And that was perfect. So the way they set that up, Blake Corum running hard, fantastic. So there were a couple things that prevented this from being maybe a 38-7 or a 41-7 game or something like that. Number one, on their second drive, they're going down. Zach Zinter, I think, steps on J.J. McCarthy's foot. What happens there as an offensive lineman? Who's that on? And because they're taking a shot there, Skeen, that's a first down play.
I know.
And
I know.
You know what? And they're moving right downfield. I'm thinking, if they go 14-0, that might be it. We might as well just go home and go out to eat.
And we were, it was almost chicken sandwich sign time almost. Earlier in that game. Yeah. So as an offensive lineman, you know, linemen are always taught to.
I love that.
10-34 Jose. Nice. Yeah. As an offensive lineman, you're always thinking, where does my first step need to go? Where do I need to plant my first move? And it's always with that right or left foot. And on that play, Zinter needed to get that left foot left. The problem is when you tighten up your splits, and splits are the difference between my foot and my left foot, as I'm Zinter, my left foot and Olabatimi's right foot, as that gets narrow and more narrow, and then you come off the ball in your stance, if you back up, you know, 6-8 inches, and you take a hard step to the left, that's all it took. And so if you're, you know, and you got to know that your quarterback's under center, he's not in the gun. So is that, you can't really blame Zinter for that. It's more or less a pre-snap consciousness of just understanding it. It's kind of a fluke thing. But JJ pivoted off his right foot to make a move to his left. So he made his first move was with his left foot, so his right foot didn't go anywhere. And Zinter's first move with Wiz was with his left foot, so there you go. You got stepped on. The good news is it didn't break JJ's foot, because, trust me, getting stepped on by a 300-pound man hurts. As a 300-pound man, I've done this to other people. It hurts other people.
I was going to ask you, do you remember ever doing it in a game and how you felt?
Not in a game, but in practice, I remember, because when you get in short yardage and goal line, you tend to tighten up your splits.
Right.
And you got to be careful of that. But my worst foot stepping incident was Greg Skrepanek, who was just shy of 400 pounds, stepped on my foot with the old 7-spike, you know, grass cleats ballast.
Yes.
I thought I was never going to walk again.
That's a big man.
That's a huge man. And Zinter's not a small man either. So I'm glad that JJ didn't hurt himself in that play. It was kind of a fluky deal, but that's all it took.
Yeah.
That knocked the rhythm of the offense off. And then we're fighting uphill to try to get back to first down yardage. And that was a moment in the game where, we could have really broken that thing open right there and taken some serious momentum down their throats. And Voila, one mistake, and here we are. The game ended up being tighter far further into that football game than it needed to be. Had Michigan just executed on a few situations, we could have put that thing away much earlier.
Right. But that's the thing, right? If you're playing a tighter offense and a little bit more conservative, which is how Jim Harbaugh wants to play, and I wrote this in a column, Skeen, it kind of felt like a Lloyd Carr win, right? Where if you do everything right, then you get Penn State 1997, where, you know what, you're running it down their throats, and then you're throwing play action. You're not missing that bomb that he missed to Roman Wilson, J.J. McCarthy, and we'll talk about the deep ball here in a minute. Yeah. But a couple of momentary lapses of judgment or concentration, and all of a sudden, you've got yourself a 20-7 game, and that brings us to our next play. You're up 20-0, and you got Michigan fans getting ready to celebrate, and they're making their reservations online, you know, about where we're going to eat. And then all of a sudden, you get a lineman who I think was probably thinking the same thing, probably about his chicken sandwich, up 20-0, and closing in at the end of the third quarter. Here's what I thought was going to happen, Skeen. I thought, okay, the way you've been running the ball and you're wearing these guys down, I thought, okay, you're going to run, you know, take this thing to the fourth quarter, up 20-0, you know. And instead, they passed twice, and on the second pass, man, disaster strikes. What happened on that play?
You're talking about the backward pass fumble
thing?
Yeah. So I went back and looked at that one several times, And it appears to me that our young right tackle there, Trente Jones, went missed assignment, went MA, because he stepped inside and there was no one home to block or check blitz. It looked like the offensive line from right guard all the way over to the left was protection set left, and that would have meant Trente had a one-on-one with that defensive end. He obviously was expecting someone to come over there and pick up that defensive end, but there was no one to do it. So it looks like Trente went missed assignment there, and then all of a sudden you got, you know, a backward pass and disaster almost strikes. We're in full control of that football game and one mistake, and now you lose 10, 15 yards. And then, you know, I think that was a second down.
More than
the
that.
Next, yeah. The next, yeah, it was 15-yard loss or whatever it was. And all of a sudden, you know, thank God we got the ball back there and recovered it. And then, you run for five and then you punt. But it's just a mental error that's got to be cleaned up. You can't let people have free shots in your quarterback. And so if you go back and you watch the film again, Ballas, the TV copy there, and, you know, you and I talk about this, when the play is over and the television camera has a wide enough angle there, you watch the body language of the guy in question. And on that one, you see Trente takes a set inside, and then he looks and sees the color go past his right, and he sees the disaster that happened in the backfield. And then the first thing he does is he looks and he turns towards Zinter, and they're obviously talking. There was a miscommunication somewhere, so I have no idea what Trente said, but he's obviously looking for, hey, what was the protection?
Right.
What happened there? So it looked like he was the odd man out. So one out of five guys makes a mistake, and you got almost a disaster.
Tropicana Banana there makes a good point. Donovan Edwards with a great hustle play.
Oh,
another sentence that I never thought I'd say, Tropicana Banana says, but in my lifetime. But it was a great play.
Yeah.
And it led to a touchdown anyway, but they took some a bad punt by Brad Robbins, really the first one of the year where he kind of shanked it a little bit. But you know what? It's that little sequence of events that there's your yellow shirt, Ballas. Yeah. Hey, it was Doug Skeen's yellow shirt.
So was my yellow shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So fat guy in a yellow shirt.
Yeah, but that was
you know me. What? Here's the thing, Skeen. These are the little plays. Like, if you're going to be in a game like that, there it is. Again, I love it so much. If you're going to be in a game like that and you're playing it close to the vest, and J.J. McCarthy, 155 yards, you know what? They're not turning him loose, nor should they have in this game. And in fact, Kirk Ferentz, Iowa's coach, said after the game, we thought we could get a few more of those from him or a young quarterback with our defensive line. Two things, the offensive line overall did a fantastic job protecting and in run blocking. Yep. So
on to the Ballas, there were only three plays that stick out in my mind that were four. I'm going to say there were four offensive line related plays that caused us problems. And we had 60, 70 snaps in that football game. We dominated the possession of time, first downs, rushing yardage, everything. But there were four. We just talked about the one.
Yep.
And then Ryan Hayes at left tackle gave up a bad pressure on a pass rush, and he just missed and got put on roller skates. You got to eliminate that. If you want to be an All-American, you can't do those things. He's better than that. And then there was the option play to the right where Michigan did the option right. And there was one too many guys over there. JJ went to pitch the ball. And I think on that play, we had a missed assignment on the front side of that play. And then there was a third and one down on our own end. And the game was still a two possession game at that time. I think
it was
third and one, and our offensive line just got knocked straight back to a man almost across the front. And we're pretty good at short yardage and goal line. Now, throughout the course of the game, it's like, you know, third and short, second and short, powered in there. Corum finds the seam and falls forward for 4 yards or 3 yards. But on that particular play, we got stuffed.
Yep.
Those are the only four plays really that kind of stuck out as I watched the game and thought, man, with the exception of those four plays, this offensive line was outstanding.
Right. And it is our job to talk about these things, folks, you know, because these are, if in an Ohio State game, these are plays that can cost you that game, for example.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk, though, about two of those plays that you brought up, the option play. My tweet on that one was, you know what, you're getting 5-6 yards a pop. If you're going to run the ball, you know what, why bring out the option there at that point? You're running it down their throats, and it's like Harbaugh said early in the game, you're getting 5-7 yards a pop. And you know what, if you want to run and make it four down territory type of thing, you know what, run it at them. I didn't like the option there, and and Trente Jones was on roller skates, man. If you watch that play again.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He got knocked back. And again, I don't know the assignments, but there has to be a pitch man, a read man, right? So, and I'm wondering if Trente blocked that read man because no one was assigned to that front side linebacker. You see Zinter makes a move to his offensive left.
Okay.
And then he kind of goes up and looks at him and gives an arm toward him, but he had no angle at him. So it would make more sense to me that Trente would have taken a big, fat, wide split and then dipped that shoulder to go dart for the front side linebacker. JJ reads that defensive end as he comes up to play him or the running back, and then you pitch or keep, whatever. It looks like there was a miscommunication on the front side of that one. But, you say, it's our job to talk about this stuff. We bring this up, and I bring this up as a former player because I guarantee you, Coach Moore, 100%. These are the things that he's looking at in the offensive breakdown. You have a great game,
right?
And you get all your helmet stickers, and it's a great vibe. But when they sit down and they look at this film, there's going to be negatives on some of these plays. And, if you grade it out at 85, maybe a bunch of these guys probably graded out at 85%, maybe higher, who knows? That's still not 100%.
Right.
And so there's always room for improvement, and that's the way these players are coached.
Right.
And so, yeah, you did a great job. But you're not perfect. And until you're perfect, then we're going to keep coaching you. So that's all we're talking about here.
Right. And in no way, shape, or form do we think these guys aren't doing a good job. Now, on that third and one play that you're talking about, that clock's running down. And I'm going to give these guys the benefit of the doubt here. They should have called timeout, okay? Because when they snap that ball, that defense is running downhill. And what they should have done is called a timeout and gotten a better play in there. And giving them time to set because they were running downhill at the snap is what I remember. And I'm thinking, man,
that's another thing. Tommy, you made a great point. I watched that one. I'm like, man, you're running to the boundary side. Right. There's less room over there.
Yep.
So again, I wasn't thrilled with the play call either. Mm-hmm. It gets a little finesse, a little cutesy, running that thing. You're pitching the ball, which adds another element of risk.
Yep.
And Michigan's offensive line was doing so well in other facets that they had done so far to that point in the game. But I understand they're cracking open a few extra pages in that playbook. Hadn't seen that one yet. It's obviously in there to be worked on.
Yep, and back to third and one. That was a very critical point in the game because Iowa had just scored. You'd just given them momentum. And I'm thinking, if you go three and out here, we got a ball game. I guarantee it because that's what we've seen at Iowa. I thought Michigan got a favorable whistle in that game, to be honest with you, compared to past years in Iowa.
Let's take my Michigan hat off here. Iowa got screwed on two calls. Absolutely screwed. Yep. The one kid that locked on to Sandristil and pancaked him.
Yeah.
Right? I thought this was football, Ballas.
I knew you were going to say this.
I thought this was football. We're still watching this. So the kid gets the 15-yard penalty, and as an offensive lineman, you got a blitzer coming in here, and it's a little guy, doesn't matter, whoever it is. If you're going to threaten my quarterback and I can get my hands on you, I am going to make you wonder whether you want to do this again. And that's exactly what that kid did to our defender. And when he locked onto that defender, the ball was gone. That offensive lineman is not taught to see, am I away from the player or not? Should I be looking to see, should I stop blocking you or not? That's not how these guys are taught.
Yep.
And so the official throws the 15-yard flag, personal foul flag for unnecessary roughness. I'm like, that is a BS call right there. And if I were Iowa, I'd be livid about that one. Yep. And then the other one, which was the clipping call, that was a really well-executed backside cut block by that right tackle. He got all the way down in front of Graham, got his body in front of the knees, and cut block him clean. He did not hit him in the back of the leg. And so those two calls, talking about favorable whistles, in our favor for sure, and they were big ones for Iowa. But as an objective offensive line guy who just likes to watch good offensive line play, I wish, I love doing that to dudes that would come in on blitzes, absolutely bury them as much as I could. And then the other one on the clipping is like, come on, man, those are bad calls.
I think that's a letter of the law thing in college, though. I'm not positive. I'm going to go back and we'll ask them about that on Monday. But
which one, the clipping or the?
Yeah, the clipping. Now, the first one, I'm speaking for smaller guys everywhere. I thought it was a great call. bullies like you need to be put in their place at some point. And I thought that official did a great job.
Yeah, no, I disagree.
I know you disagree. Do. I understand. Yeah.
And the other thing about that clipping call, Ballas.
Yep.
The ball was still technically in the box.
Yes.
So you were allowed to engage a defender. Now, no one else was touching that three technique that Graham was playing. That right tackle got down in front without anybody else touching him, so there was no high-low personal foul thing there. I thought it was a clean block, and I think Iowa got jammed on that.
And I think that Kirk Ferentz did too. And then he mentioned something in the postgame about how it's going to change next year anyway, so it doesn't matter, and the rules and so on and so forth.
I don't know what he's talking about there.
I don't either. So we're going to do a little bit more digging on that. We'll talk about that in next week's show. So when we have, I think Doug Karsh, the voice of Michigan football, is going to join us.
All right, cool.
Yep, which is great. So he's been doing a really good job. But yeah, so there, that's what we're talking about in terms of the calls, and you get the favorable whistles. And
hey, I wasn't going to complain too much, right?
Right, exactly.
It's not very often that we get the favorable whistles. It seems like we're always the ones getting jammed. So I was like, yeah, you know what? Iowa got screwed on that one, but I'm not going to complain too much.
And
And
Ferentz said it did change the tenor of the game a little bit, and it did. At the same time, Michigan was dominant throughout most of this game, with the exception of probably 7 or 8 minutes where they let it get away. So now let's talk a little bit about the center play. Olu Oluwatimi, I was watching him, and I was watching from the get-go, and unfortunately, again, thanks to you, I'm watching offensive line play early in games instead of, you know, the things I should be watching, you know, the fun stuff.
No, that's what you should be watching.
I know. That's what you say, but it's just not as fun, folks. Trust me. But I was watching.
What DVR is for, Ballas. You hit the replay, you know.
Yeah. Now, when you're up there live, skiing,
I know.
You don't have that luxury.
I know.
So, but Olu Oluwatimi, I thought, had his best game, and I thought he was pushing people around. I could sense the difference. This is the first game where I'm like, okay, this guy is really, really having an impact. I thought he played his best game in a Michigan uniform.
So when you don't see leakage up the middle in our passing downs, and you don't see pressure, and you know, JJ or whoever's in there, but now obviously JJ doesn't have room to step up or move around in there. When you know that's clean, you know your center is the bedrock of that offensive line. And no news is good news when you are watching the quarterback and he's making his throws or whatever. When he's got the room to do so, and when he follows through with his arm and it's not touching the back of someone's uniform or helmet or whatever, you know your center's doing a nice job. And so, yeah, I'm watching him. And I just think this offensive line is, boy, they're picking up momentum. Keegan in there, I watch him and play in there in the middle, Ballas. He's got a swagger to him, and I think he might be the guy that likes to rub your nose in it a little bit. And I love watching that. You know I love watching that.
I know you do.
I think he plays with a little bit of a nasty edge. But you watch that trio in the middle there with Oluwatimi, who's doing a really nice job. And those two guards, they got a little something going here.
Yep.
And they're starting to bully people. And our two tackles are really good players too. I think, but you know, we focus on them because it's just a play or two in these games where they'll give some pressure or a sack. You got to clean that up. But I think this offensive line is really starting to come around and do some things that are exciting to watch.
And they haven't been playing together that much this year because they've all been banged up. And there was a concern going into this game about Keegan. We'd heard some buzz that, man, they're looking at the leg and so on and so forth. And to the point where, you know, he might be out a while. We got better news on Thursday.
Well, he looks like he's moving fine.
He does now.
His lower body. Yeah. He's got the neck roll on. He's wearing that big yellow or the big white neck thing.
Yeah.
That is an indication that he's got a stinger issue.
Okay.
As an offensive lineman, when you get hit, your head comes back this way. Not to bore you with sciencey stuff, Ballas, because I'm no doctor, because I had stingers. And let me tell you how much they freaking hurt.
I can imagine.
There's a nerve junction in all of our human bodies right here in the back of the neck. And when that thing gets pinched, it literally feels like someone's holding a blowtorch to your arm. It hurts. And so the way you do that is you prevent your head from going back like that, and you put a big old school neck roll on, and that prevents it. So I'm looking at that. I'm going, hey, you probably had a stinger or two, but then those can keep you out, man. Yeah. They hurt.
Like those old school Michigan linebackers, those big slow guys that played just before you, the Mallorys. No disrespect, Matt, the Mike Mallory and Andy Moeller.
Neck rolls, man.
Neck rolls, baby. But see, he's not just a big dumb animal, folks. This guy, you want science, you want, you know what?
Sciencey.
Exactly. This guy's a smart lineman. So, and most of these guys are. It's funny, but you get a bad rap. So other than the mean thing, you guys are a little bit mean, but that's a good thing with what you want from. And when you say Keegan, because it's funny, when I was talking to him afterwards and I asked him that first question, you know, when you saw the film of this Iowa team, I asked him in the post game, I said, you know, could you sense that you guys might be in line for a big day, and I could see his eyes light up, you know, and he took it. These guys take it personal when everybody's talking about this number one ranked defense and Iowa and back in black. They play back in black when they come out skiing. It's really cool. And then they kicked their ass for the better part of that that first series. They just moved right down the field.
They did. There was a couple of short yardage and goal line plays. I think one of the touchdowns that we had, maybe it was a third and goal. I can't even remember. I'm looking at, you know, you look where the ball goes, and Corum went to the right side of the offense. Zinter and Trente absolutely drug those dudes out, submarine them, and move them back. And all you need is a yard or two. It's exactly what we had. I think it was a third and one. It doesn't matter. So they got down, did the nasty work, and they're grinding people out of there. And again, you know, for us and our conversation, for Michigan fans, this is all good. You just got to clean up those other things. You can't make the big mistakes and put and allow your quarterback to have the ball on the ground in a critical moment. So perfection is the goal. And if you can get, you know, again, the standard always was 80% or higher, then you're playing championship football. To be the very best, you probably need to be up near 90% with none of those really, really bad plays. But this offensive line is coming around, and I feel like they're really, you know, I'm a big, you know, we talk about it all the time, Ballas, big proponent of watching that body language. And you see an offensive line start to kind of get that. We are actually going to start torturing you here today in front of your parents and your girlfriend, and you're going to do nothing about it.
Except
and
get that your chicken sandwich after.
Get your chicken sandwich. Hey, get your ass on the bus. Go get your chicken sandwich, because we're about done with you people. And it's so much fun to do that to opponents. I'm telling you, Ballas, it's so much fun. I'm jealous because these guys get to do it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now it stands. I want to ask you this, because somebody had said, okay, is it a case where Michigan's line was that good, or Iowa's, you know, you talk about Iowa not having a Mike Morris and not having a Mozzie Smith. And I think that was pretty clear, but how is, could it be a case of the Michigan line just making them look worse than they are?
I think it's a combination. I think that this offensive line has got something going here, and I think they can be very, very good. I see yellow shirt guy.
I love Jose.
This offensive line is coming into their own, and it's still early in this season. I think that at the same time, again, in my objective view, I didn't see the overpowering stud defensive lineman that I mentioned earlier that I think Michigan has, and the way they played. And so I think it's a little bit of both. I do think this offensive line, again, is gaining in confidence. And what they can do, what they know they can do, and they're starting to show signs where they're just going to impose their will on people. And I don't care who the opponent is, because we got some big ones coming up. That's exactly what you want to see.
Yep. And then Jay Sherba on our message board had asked me earlier to ask you about the offensive line for Iowa and compared them to Maryland. He said Maryland had big guys that had, you could tell had been playing together for a while. A couple guys are going to be in the NFL. Yep. How does Iowa's offensive line stack up to that one from what you saw?
Maryland's better. Yeah. Maryland's offensive line was better. Iowa, you know, they mentioned it in the telecast, Iowa looked a little young, inexperienced, and I thought they played that way. A little streaky at times, couldn't protect their quarterback. Pass protection. You can always tell if an offensive line lacks its ability to have the millions and millions of reps together in game situations. When you see pocket pass protection, your right tackle's hips are you know, maybe 4 yards deep, and your right guard is too high, and you have that big gap in between. There's a spatial recognition between all linemen, and you create this gap and this pocket for that protection. And it just you can't replicate it in practice. And so you get into game, and one guy makes a mistake, and it can kind of steamroll and get out of control. And I'm looking at this offensive line of Iowa's. I'm like, they certainly have the parts and pieces. They just don't have the experience yet. So better things to come for them. But to answer your question, and I believe absolutely Maryland's offensive line was better.
Yeah, they took it out on Michigan State, too. Boy, we'll talk about the Big Ten here in a minute, but that's a program that's reeling right now. Not good. They're $95 million worth. So I want to talk about Cade McNamara, not Cade McNamara, J.J. McCarthy here, though. And really, when you talk about 155 yards, if this were a Cade McNamara offense, you'd have people squawking that, hey, why don't we have J.J. in there?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's not about who's there. It's about the offense that they're running. And he missed a couple of shots. You look at the numbers, 18 to 24. This kid's fantastic. Okay, the accuracy's great, right? He's except for the deep ball, and that's something that he's got to work on. The interesting part is that Michigan was number one in the country in explosive plays over 50 yards last year. Mm. Now they're dead last. They've got, I think, one over 40, which is, I think, you know, bottom 20% in the country. So part of it is there's two things to it, right? The deep ball, he's not hitting the deep ball. Otherwise, those numbers would be, you know what, you'd be have five or six. It's a tough pass. That the percentages on a deep ball, I don't think people understand. Mm-hmm. Joel Klatt said, you know what, that's a low percentage play, you know, no matter how good a quarterback you are. And you see guys in the pros missing guys on the deep ball all the time. But to me, this is a Jim Harbaugh's offense and the way he wanted it. And I thought he played it perfectly in this game. You're going to open it up. But that was a play. It's not playing not to lose. It's playing smart football and against that team in that environment.
It feels like they're keeping JJ between the guardrails, mm-hmm. in the safe part of the road here, which is exactly where he needs to be. Remember, this is his first season as the starting quarterback for Michigan. And in this Iowa game, for sure, it's like, hey, we got this offensive line. We scripted the first couple series, which they usually do. We've done absolutely what we want to do to them. We don't need to get greedy here and start slinging this ball down the field. Sure, we'll take our shots, and Michigan did. And yes, he needs to connect on these deep balls by about 2 feet, and all of a sudden we've got all these touchdowns instead of incompletions. So that's awfully close. But I thought in this game, in the previous, you know, game against Maryland, it's like, okay, let's not ask him to be some superhero back there. Let's get him to play the position. And I think there is some development that we're seeing here with this young quarterback, in that when he's given the time and he sits in there, he's looking. Number one, yes, no, no. Number two, yes, no, no. Number three, where's my tight end? There he is, right there. And the ball is gone into a catchable tight end reception, and off goes Schoonmaker for a first down. And so there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing super flashy, right? 155 yards, who cares? But Ballas, we handled Iowa pretty easily, and if not for a few plays, we blow them out by two or three more touchdowns.
Right.
And so I'm not concerned at all about this. I think it is interesting that, you know, one of the bags on Cade was he couldn't connect on the deep ball. And now Cade's got a little bit of a slump going here with connecting on the deep ball.
JJ, you mean?
I'm sorry, JJ, yeah. Yes.
Yep.
But that was the knock on Cade a year ago, right? He couldn't do the deep ball. And now JJ's having a little bit of struggles, the same thing. I wonder the same thing. Talking about Michigan's offense, I was talking to some of my buddies today. We're out playing golf. And who is Michigan's number one wide receiver threat? Who would you say that is? And I'm thinking to myself, is it Roman Wilson? Who is the guy on the edge of this offense that is the playmaker? I just don't know that they have one yet. And Wilson definitely is one of the guys. But who are the other ones that are supposed to be, or were supposed to be?
Yep.
You know, Andrell Anthony's got all this, you know, exciting physical ability, made a big play in that game and got open. I think he's an exciting guy, but there hasn't been anybody established yet. Is that because of the harness and the leash that's been put on JJ, or is that because no one has established an ability to consistently get open? I don't know the answer.
I don't either. Andrell Anthony, though, had that big game against Michigan State where you thought, with the route running and the catches and everything else, this is a guy who's going to be that guy. He had 11 snaps on Saturday, I think it was. So Cornelius Johnson was out there for 55, I think. He had one catch for 7 yards. I think Ronnie Bell is the answer to that question. But I think Ronnie Bell on the elite groups of Michigan receivers over the years would be a number two or a number three guy, right? Mm-hmm. If you go back to Jason Avant, Steve Breston, and Braylon Edwards, for example, man, that is an elite trio of receivers. So you're holding them to that standard, that Michigan standard, which is, you know, having some of the best receiving groups in the country. No, he's not that. But a lot of the times, for example, we've talked about this, you don't see the fades anymore. You don't see the 50-50 balls where these guys are getting their opportunities to make plays. They were just showing highlights of Michigan versus Iowa from, I think, 2003, mm-hmm. where Braylon Edwards goes up and gets a jump ball and drop can of banana again. Bell is great at high pointing the ball. He is. And his hands are getting better. You see him getting more confident. Everybody talks about the drops. So, you know, I think we will see more of that in these next few weeks with Indiana's awful ranked pass defense. I think Penn State's 112th in the country scheme in pass defense. They're usually better than that. And then Michigan State, which is, I think, 102nd. So I do want to go back to Lamar's question. He was asking about, did Michigan attack Iowa's too deep enough? And I thought that they took their shots. And I think it was good what they did. You know what? It's like, another thing Kirk Ferentz said is it is easy to call plays when you can run the ball.
Yeah, I was going
to
say
to that
Lamar, what I would tell you is when you're dominating the offensive line, why do you need to? Because you could, you could have. Yes, we could have attacked that more than we did. But when you are demoralizing the defensive front, when that defense gets back in a huddle, the secondary, it's like a feeling in a huddle. And you know when the big boys up front are getting their butts whipped by the opposing offensive line, it takes all the energy and sucks the air right out of that huddle. It's like, oh crap, right? Yeah. So whenever you can do that, that's absolutely what you want to do.
Yep. And I was more disappointed with the execution, frankly. The deep ball to Wilson, that was a perfect time for that play. And I tweeted just a few minutes before, I'm like, they are pounding them. They are going to take their shot over the top, and it's going to be there. Again, missed it by a couple of feet. You know what? He's getting closer, right? Yeah. A couple of these, that, you know, last week where, you know, he threw them over their heads. You know, they aren't all going to be the Hawaii ball, to Cornelius Johnson, where you put it right on the money. But and then they were going to take that shot when Zach Zinter, you know, stepped on JJ's foot. So they were taking their shots, and that easily could have been, you know, a 250-yard game if you hit a couple of those. And I think you will see more and more of that. And I think against Indiana, I think that's where you're going to see them open it up a little bit more too. But I do want to talk about the running game and Blake Corum here, who, you know, we were asking what's he going to do when Hassan Haskins isn't here? He's really taken over to the point. One thing he's doing, which is interesting to me, he seems to be skipping a little bit when he gets that ball. Have you noticed that? When he's
skipping?
Waiting for that hole? Yeah, when he was waiting for that hole to open.
Yeah, it could be what he's doing with his feet. He's demonstrating patience.
Right.
Patience. And he's looking, and he's not just looking at his intended gap.
Right.
Wherever that ball is intended to go, but he sees between his tackles. And if he sees a daylight over here, but on their base running plays, Ballast, and you can see it, especially in those behind the offensive line views, he's demonstrating patience. He's letting those, when two linemen come together for a down lineman combination block, he's got to wait for that other lineman to release to go to the second level, and he's not getting ahead of that second guy.
Yeah.
And that is allowing him to have an extra 2 or 3 yards per run. So that comes with maturity and experience, and that's obviously what he's doing with regularity. 133 yards. I mean, the kid's just obviously a workhorse.
Yeah.
And I think he's got some underrated speed too, Bowers, when he does get in the open.
Yeah, there's no question he's got good speed.
And when he gets into the secondary, he's going to punish a defensive back.
Yep, 133 yards.
You're going to have to absolutely get physical to tackle this kid, and that's a good thing too.
And the number that stands out here, J.J. McCarthy, you know, got sacked a couple times, 14 yards and losses. However, that was the fumble was the big play that. But there's more from him when they need him, in my opinion. Now, you bring that out in Ohio State game, you know, maybe something they haven't seen a lot more of the read option. This kid's fast and he can be a weapon there. But without Cade McNamara now, your backup is a guy who hasn't played a whole lot of football. Alan Bowman has at Texas Tech. So I think you're going to see them be a little bit more careful with him. And I think they should be. I don't think you sit there and you run him, and like they ran Denard Robinson. Remember him? He had a nerve problem that never went away because they were beating the crap out of him.
If you're going to have a quarterback that is a critical part of your rushing offense, you better have two.
Yeah.
And they better be ready to go. And right now we don't have two for sure things. We have one. So it does make more sense that you play more of a conservative style. And again, when you can take your one established quarterback and hand it off to a workhorse running back like Corum behind an offensive line that is gaining more momentum and confidence, you do that until you can't do it anymore.
Yep.
And that is the answer to keeping your other quarterback healthy.
Let's talk about the defensive line. I didn't see a ton of pass rush until the end of that game. I thought the deciding series was when Iowa gets the ball back down 20-7 and boom, four times. Iabi Oki and Mike Morris got in there. And I'm thinking these guys flat out took over that series. And
just dominated.
Iowa's line looked defeated.
Yeah. So Morris, obviously, two plays in a row, incredible, just making that right tackle have nightmares for the rest of his, you know, season. And then Oki comes in there and they run a little defensive end twist, right? So it was tackle end, and Oki was the second guy coming around. He did a really nice job, Ballas, of keeping his path tight and up in the middle. Sometimes, just like a pulling offensive lineman, if you get wide and too deep, you waste space and you take yourself out of the play. He did a really nice job executing that twist. And boy, he was up in that quarterback's face. So I think when that kid's on the field, he brings a little bit of a spark to that pass rush. I think you're going to see more of him. I like him a lot. So Morris has flashes. Yeah, Mike.
And you're right, Mike. It's like before that, they hadn't been getting a whole lot of now, I don't know how much of max protecting they did, Iowa, because they've got their statue back there. And they found holes in the seams there of that defense. Yeah. I want to talk about that in a second, too. But were these guys max protecting against the four-man rush?
I didn't see tight ends hanging in there long because their one tight end was lighting it up. But I would say that, to that point that I think it was Mike that just made that comment about Morris, you got to have flashes before you can get consistency. Mm-hmm. So I would say the pass rush individually, is a work in progress, right? I think this defensive line, very similar to this offensive line, I think these guys are gaining confidence. And what they did late in that football game in that series against Iowa is another building block toward what this defensive line, I think, can do. Yep. And they do have a nice rotation, and I like the combination that they're putting in. I think you're going to see Oki more on the field. I think that 100% guy brings a spark to it. And Morris, those were two plays in a row. And, yeah, that right tackle that he was working against, was his head was spinning and it was out of sorts. Oh, well, sucks to suck, dude. So here he comes, again. They weren't giving him help. No, they didn't, Ballas. Yeah. They didn't send a tight end over there. They didn't send a back over there to chip him either. And, hey, that's the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to block that guy, but he couldn't.
It didn't look like they were blitzing a whole lot. Is that true? Sucks to suck. That's a Doug Skeen chicken sandwich and sucks to suck. Two things that we're going to put on the Doug Skeen shirt that we sell to our subscribers. But I didn't think Michigan blitzed a whole lot in this game. And I think maybe there were a couple times that I think they were worried about maybe the screen passes. They're going to Spencer Petras, you're going to beat us. And they didn't think he was going to. Now, he had some tough moments, but he also had some moments where I thought there was too much room between the linebackers and the safeties there, and they found the seams. And it was a little disappointing.
Yeah, their tight ends are running a little bit free. They made some plays, right? How tight do you really expect this Michigan defense to be? Again, I think, we're coming along and they're building confidence. And, they're giving up yards, but they weren't giving up the points, Ballas. So they were stiffening them up where they needed to be. And I kind of like where they're at right now. Mm-hmm. And, let's call out Upshaw on the play he made on that screen play where he smelled the rat, Ballas. Yep. Smelled the rat, and then
another one.
Yeah, sometimes you smell a rat, you got to know where to find him, and he found it on that one and made a great play. So, watching this defense, having the success they're having it, and having fun together, you can't put that in the stat line anywhere. But it's a big difference maker when you see guys playing together and celebrating together, building confidence together. It just snowballs, Ballas. I'm telling you, for having been there and done this, you just build this confidence and the expectations go up and you're feeling good about the next opponent and you know about the one at the end of the season. It's like, we're building towards something big here.
Yeah, you loved playing on the road, didn't you? Guys taking over their stadiums?
Loved it. But Ballas, I'm telling you, it's just – when you come out in every stadium, you come out somewhere near the fans, right? You come out for you smell a rat in your chicken sandwich. Yes, that would suck.
Sucks to suck. Yes.
You come out near, you come out for pregame, and there's usually some clowns near your tunnel barking at you, telling you the worst things about your mom and your sister you could ever imagine. And you kind of look up and you see them, right? And they're up there and they've had a few beers at the tailgate and they're jawing at you. You go out for a warm-up, you come back, and it's the same fat guy barking at you and his ugly girlfriend saying stuff to you that you'd never want to hear in your life. And then you go out and you play the first half, and maybe it's a tight game. You come back at the half through the same tunnel. It's the same fat guy with the ugly girlfriend, and you want to do something, but you can't. And then by the end of the game, Ballas, when you've absolutely demoralized everybody and you've won and the stadium is silent and everybody's shoulders are down and you come walking back down there, if the fat guy's still sitting there, you kind of look at him and you just kind of give him one of those, Gotcha, buddy.
It's like Mike Leach here. It's like we're having Mike Leach on our podcast. We have to get Mike here to talk with Don. Oh, God. I think Don's dead. God rest his soul. But fantastic, because every time it is funny because you do hear those guys, and, no wonder you're so calm, cool, and collected on the golf course. If somebody yelled that to me, I'd be like in tears, My mom's a saint.
I mean, the worst things a human could possibly say to another human. And now, but these are grown men usually saying things men. To 19, 20-year-old young men out there playing college football, and you can't What are you going to do? Tell them to shut up? No. So right. All you can do, Balish, is you go out there and you absolutely destroy his favorite football team. And it's just so satisfying to go into someone else's stadium and shut them all up and walk out of there like, we just did that to your team. Enjoy the rest of the night, people.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when you do that in, you know, in most other stadiums on the way back out, you get on the bus. And you get your own chicken sandwich and your own little box meal and your king-size Snickers bar and your bag of chips, and everybody's happy, right?
Tastes a little better.
It tastes a little bit better, and the police escort takes you away and then the bus out of town, and then usually you see the opponents and their tailgates giving you the big middle finger as the buses go by, and you just wave. Hey, bye.
God, I love these podcasts. Oh, man. All right, a couple things before we go. What about the kids that aren't playing, okay? Because we hear, social media is the devil, all right? We both know that. But you know what? You get these comments out there, so-and-so should be playing more, should transfer to Illinois or whatever. And then these kids are liking these posts, you know, even after a win, and you know what? They didn't play a whole lot. And then you hear the story about the kid on the sidelines who's mad that he didn't play more, and, you know, he's walking off the field in disgust. Mm-hmm. Was there always that? Is it just more obvious now because of the social media?
I think it's more prevalent for sure because of the megaphone that everybody has sitting in their pocket with their smartphone. Right. And that's just the way things are now. I think there's always that feeling, but the answer to that same point has always been the same. If you were worthy of playing time and you were demonstrating this in fall camp and in practice, especially on Tuesdays and Wednesdays when you're playing live football, you would be out there. If you were that good and you were that big of a difference maker, you will find your way on the field. And if you're not playing, there's usually a reason why. And in my experience of being there and doing this and watching these other players that we've seen come in through Michigan, and you're there far more than I am. You are closer to practices than I am, Ballas. Players are making plays in practice, and the players always know who the players are. And on every team, there's always a handful of guys that just want to sit in the corner and woe is me. It's all about me, and I should be playing more. Well, you know what? Maybe you should do more, and then you will find yourself playing more. And that's usually how it goes.
Yep, you're 5-0, and you are number 4 in the country, folks. You know what? You're going to get your chance, and you're going to get your opportunities. So easy for me to say as the guy, you know, who would have been either the holder or the kicker. But you know what? You waited your turn.
I was one of those guys, right?
Right, exactly.
I sat on the bench at Michigan for 3.5 seasons and thought, you know, I thought I was practicing just as good as some of my other line mates, and yet I wasn't playing, and I got frustrated, and it's like, what do I got to do? And then I realized the answer for me to get on that field is to destroy more people in practice. And when I started doing that, magically, I started playing. And so that's how it works.
Yep, there's Jacob Sherba again, one of our better posters. Instant reaction thoughts on the report that Wisconsin is parting ways with Paul Chryst with Leonard as interim. Leonard being the defensive coordinator. I can't believe that either.
However, come on.
Now wait a minute. Illinois goes in there with Brett Bielema. And I got to tell you this dream I had last night. I was actually talking to Brett Bielema. He was in a t-shirt and he was on the field. And I said, well, and Illinois had just beaten Wisconsin. They held him to 2 yards rushing scheme.
Yeah, I know.
Illinois did. They went in there and kicked their ass. And I said in my dream to Bielema, how about coming back to Wisconsin or something like that? And, you know, doing the whole 360 thing. And in my dream, he goes, wow, wouldn't that be something, you know, type of thing. That'll never happen. Number one, because of the way they parted ways. But number two, if this is the case,
I can't believe this.
You know, here's the thing, but their identity was just beating the crap out of you. And we can have Hutch look into this and see if there's any truth to this report. But you know what? Their identity here, the further they get away from Bielema here with Chryst, you know, you can say, boy, 2 yards rushing, man, that's not Wisconsin football. Yeah, they go out and get Graham Mertz, that quarterback that's supposed to be all everything. You know what? They can't move the ball anymore.
Here's Wisconsin's problem this year. They don't have the guys on the edge of their offense for Mertz to get the ball to. They don't have elite receivers. Their offensive line has been, oh my, I can't believe this.
Wow.
It is what it is. This is college football, win or get the hell out. So that's the way it is now. And Wisconsin's defense does not have the front 7 studs. They've got a really good nose tackle. But they run that odd front, Ballas. They run a 3-4 defense. They had those stud outside linebackers that could rush the passer. Those guys are all in the NFL now. So this is a little bit of a rebuild on the defensive side for Wisconsin. But I understand 2 yards of rushing. Wisconsin still has talent in their offensive line. They have a good young running back, and they can't seem to get any push. I don't know. I thought that Rudolph was still the offensive line coach up there, and that's the same guy that's been pumping dudes in the NFL for 10, 15 years up there. I don't know. I thought there was a staff change, and maybe he was the offensive coordinator, and that got switched. But it's been a little bit clunky up there with the Badgers, and I just can't believe, because Chris was – I mean, they love him there, right? I guess I want to know more.
Not anymore. And Brett Bielema, you know what? When you get embarrassed by the guy that embarrassed you, you know what? That's going to make you do something probably. So, and you know what? They're 0-2.
Because Alvarez is the coach, right? Or he's the athletic director.
I don't think he is. He might have retired, but regardless, I'm sure he's got some say. But 0-2 in that division, Skeen, that is the worst division in football. Even your guy, Row the Boat guy, loses 20-10. PJ Fleck. So does anybody want to win that division, man? I don't think they do. The fact that Nebraska is in tied for first place after firing Scott Frost.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Row the boat guy's team, I got a feeling, read a too few many things about how good they were, started reading their own clippings, got a little soft, thinks, oh, it's just Purdue coming to town. Purdue's been playing people tough all year. And so Minnesota got a little taste of reality up there.
And lost their running back.
And they lost their running back. Yep. And so Wisconsin now in total turmoil. That's unbelievable. Yep. Northwestern is a train wreck this year. The West Side, Iowa, you know, can Iowa come around? And the West, I don't know. The West is a mess.
I said in a tweet, I said, whoever wins that trophy should donate it to recycling because it's not going to really be worth a whole lot, man.
Yeah, you're going to come out of the West and you're going to play Ohio State or Michigan. Yep. Good luck with that, whoever it is in the Big Ten West. Yep. So
interesting. You know. Your thoughts on the rest of the East, man? Michigan State reeling right now.
I'm disappointed. You know, I'm disappointed not in a Michigan State fan kind of way, but their quarterback should be better than this.
Well, the rest of the team kind of sucks, too.
I understand that. And I understand the secondary is getting all kinds of, you know, negative commentary. But Ballas, how many times have we got to say it? If you can't get to the quarterback and disrupt his life back there, it's going to be a long afternoon. And Michigan State cannot do that with consistency. So, of course, it makes your secondary look worse. But offensively, the Michigan State quarterback there, Thorne. I mean, come on, man. He's you can't turn the ball over like this kid's doing. He's taking a step back. And so they look like they're a hot mess. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to come into Ann Arbor here in a few weeks and be anything short of Super Bowl contenders, because they will. That's how they play this game.
Right.
But right now they're swirling around the toilet bowl. They got Ohio State this week, Ballas. And
name your score.
I'm telling you, speaking of the rest of the Big Ten, so I've got a personal friend who was at the Wisconsin-Ohio State game, and I talked to this personal friend of mine last week, and he's like, Ohio State's offensive line is quietly badass. They are very good. Their two tackles that were kind of fat and lumpy last year got in shape, and they could move. Okay. He's like, that Ohio State offensive line is real, and his comment to me was, Ohio State, hey, if we played this team 10 times, we might win one or two. And he's like, no, if we play this team 10 times, Ohio State's going to absolutely track meet us 10 times. They're that good.
And this is a guy who knows football, people.
He knows football.
I know who he's talking about.
He knows football. Yeah, very, very well. And so Ohio State is who we thought they were going to be. Damn good.
Yeah, personal when they lost to Michigan, and everybody's telling them how badly they suck and that you guys don't deserve to play anymore.
And that was the thing that he said. He's like, this Ohio State team looks like they're playing with a chip on their shoulder with something to prove. With all that talent, so that's going to be an enormous challenge for Michigan down the road. But and then I think quietly, no one's paying attention to Penn State. No one's paying attention to them. And I didn't know that they didn't play all that well this yesterday. But when they play us here in a couple weeks, they'll be ready to go.
rainstorm. I think it rained consistently for the entire game. There were 8 turnovers, I think, in that game, if I'm not mistaken. So regardless, yeah. I was going to ask you about the game. We'll talk about that next week a little bit after the Indiana game. But folks, really appreciate you joining us. Give us a like if you don't mind. If you like, Doug Skeen's chicken sandwich and smell a rat stuff. So we're going to have t-shirts made, and we will let you know when those are available.
Smell
a rat. I appreciate you, brother. Always great stuff. And Hutch, our producer, thanks. And we will see you guys again next week.
Yeah. All right. Go Blue.